Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here, and we have a jam-packed Big Brother podcast for you today. What's coming in this episode is going to be, first, my conversation with AJ Mass, talking about the 12 archetypes of this Big Brother season, followed by our annual Big Brother player draft that we do with 12 players left in the game. So that's going to be all very, very fun. And then, because there was a lot of stuff that broke on the Big Brother live feeds between Thursday night into Friday, and of course, we like to do this from time to time to give you total coverage of what's happening on the BB16. Felt like it couldn't wait for Sunday. I'm going to talk to Brian Lynch for about 20 minutes later on in the podcast. If you want to jump ahead to that, that conversation with Brian starts off about an hour and 30 minutes into the show, if for any reason you want to skip ahead. So also, if you haven't listened to my interview with Brittany from this morning, I thought it was very, very fun. This was another one of these cases where she did not know a lot of the secrets inside the house, and that's always very fun when I get to tell some people about things they may not have known about in the house. So that's all very fun. That's on robhasawebsite.com. Of course, we will also be back on Sunday night talking with Hayden Moss live at 9:15 p.m. after the episode. So without further ado, here's my interview with AJ Mass. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here, and we are back with our great friend of the podcast that we've been doing this now for several years, where we go ahead and we get down to 12 players in Survivor or Big Brother. We bring this guy in because he knows about the 12 archetypes of the ideal draft leagues or fantasy leagues or reality TV show competitions or any groups of 12. That is from ESPN.com, the author of How Fantasy Sports Explains the World and Yes, It's Hot in Here, Adventures in the Weird Woolly World of Sports Mascots. Please welcome back Mr. AJ Mass.
Hey, Rob. Good to be back. No sock monkeys to be found in those books, but nevertheless, I am here once again to tackle the 12 personalities.
Yes, and AJ, always great to talk to you. I know people are people know when we get down to like 13, 14, hey, when is AJ Mass coming on? And, you know, we did not miss a beat this season. We had it scheduled perfectly. So here you are now with 12 people left in the Big Brother house.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to discuss this season after the debacle that was last season's Big Brother. I think this one's a lot more enjoyable to watch and a little more more entertaining to try and put this list together here. So I'm looking forward to the discussion.
Okay, so in addition to talking about who the 12 players are, and we'll set up the 12 archetypes and what they are for those of you guys who are new to our Big Brother podcast or haven't heard one of our shows with AJ before, then in the second half of the show, we will do a fantasy draft, and AJ and I will each draft teams of six go for the final, you know, whatever, however many, 10 weeks of the show, and we'll see who's going to win. Now that we have a sense of who is who in the house, and we're not just like looking at a picture and a video and trying to make a pick from there. So we also, AJ, I guess we should publicly comment on this, the Survivor Kagyan debacle, from which the last time we did this exercise back in March when we talked about this. And so we drafted our teams, and the previous two times we had done this, I had won. And it was frankly starting to get a little embarrassing for you as a fantasy expert that I was just dominating, AJ.
Yeah, you were dominating in terms of the final result, although I would probably say that the scores were relatively close. You know, point here, point there, vote there, vote there. An immunity challenge that went the other directions. You know, it could have been determined a little bit differently. Was not a foregone conclusion about 1 week after we finished the draft.
The good players, though, they win those close games. That's what they say.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Then Survivor Kagyan happened, and I think it was the first pagonging in the history of fantasy drafts, as you put it, a pagonging, because we drafted our teams, and my team consisted of, or let me give you, AJ's team was Spencer, Cass, Tony, Woo, Morgan, and Trish. And my team was LJ, Sarah, Tasha, Jeremiah, Alexis, and Jeffra. And so by the final five, I was completely eliminated. Not mathematically eliminated, but my entire team was gone when we got down to five players, which is hard to do on a team of six players.
It is hard to do. It was. You know, you called it a debacle. I call it the glorious celebration of my brilliance. But, you know, hey.
Yes.
Tomato, tomato.
And AJ, it just goes to show you why you make your living as a fantasy sports writer.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Look at it this way. If I were ever on one of these shows, I doubt I would make it past the merge. So, you know.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, congratulations officially on your victory. And we'll talk about that more when we get to the draft portion of the show. So let's, before we get into the archetypes, just broad strokes. I know you said you like this season more so than Big Brother 15. What's been your take on the Battle of the Block? I know you're an expert in, you know, looking at all sorts of different games and trying to figure out, you know, the probabilities on stuff. Do you like the Battle of the Block as a twist, and has it improved the game this year?
Yeah, I have to say, when I first heard the announcement of the twist, I was very, very skeptical and very worried and concerned, because it sounded a lot like Survivor to me, especially when they went ahead and did the dual launch night with, you know, basically two tribes of eight, which is where I thought they were going with it. Had they done that, I would have hated it no end and really been opposed to it. But as it turns out, it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. I think it's probably outlived its usefulness by now, and I wish they would have gotten rid of it before this week. But I do like the fact that it forced more people to, you know, be a little bit more active or proactive in defending themselves. It wasn't just, you know, two people on the block each week. It was four. You know, it was a little creative. It gave these players an unexpected twist. I mean, you didn't go in knowing how to deal with this, and I like that they did that with it. I liked the way they did it with the heads of household, you know, having to work together if they were on opposite sides of the house. In theory, this could be really cool. I don't mind if they bring it back next season for another try, but I don't think it should go on much longer. I think 3 weeks is probably 3-4 weeks the max that it can be useful.
You know, maybe could we tweak it in a little bit of a way? How about this as a twist of, okay, let's bring the Battle of the Block back next year. But if you win the Battle of the Block, you can't be nominated the next week. So we are in this state where, okay, you know, every week, okay, Jocasta's on the Battle of the Block. Victoria's on the Battle of the Block. They're going to put Donnie on the Battle of the Block. But now if I had to, you know, I can't nominate this person again next week, or they get immunity for a second week. Do you think that that would maybe shake things up a little bit, so you couldn't have the same people over and over again on the Battle of the Block?
No, I don't really think that's the answer, because they do have immunity from, you know, getting back on the block. It's not like they can be win, take themselves off and go back on. So within a week's, I think I like having the story of 1 week, you know, having it end, and then, you know, next week is a new week. So I do like that aspect of it. I just think that you really, if it will force players, if they bring it back next year, not to sit back and just assume there's no alliance. I think it will actually cast a shadow on next season when, you know, if the same four people get nominated a second time, I think they have to realize there's an alliance. You know, I think it will just force players to learn how to play the game a little bit more. And yeah, as I say that, I know that that's not going to happen, because they'll end up casting a bunch of people who don't know the game. But in theory, I do like the fact that it does force people to make bolder moves sooner. And anything that prevents people from just sitting back and just not doing anything is a thumbs up in my book.
Yeah, do you think it's more of an issue that there are too many people in one big alliance, and then the four people or whoever who are not in the detonators / bomb squad proper? Do you feel like that's the issue, where it's just like we have like some sort of like, you know, 7 or 8 person alliance going on?
Absolutely, bro. I mean, you bring in 23 people into an alliance. I mean, I'm surprised Julie Chen wasn't in this alliance.
Yes.
I'm surprised he didn't just go, I vote to evict. Julie, would you like to be part of the bomb squad? I mean, why wouldn't he have done that? It's ridiculous how many people were in this alliance. But I don't think that was by plan or design. That was just by Devin. So, yeah, I mean, if this was six people, you would have seen, you know, Hayden and Nicole going by up on the block a little bit more, and Christine would have been on the block. I think you might have seen a little bit more mix to it, and then Christine might have formed a counter alliance. You know, who knows what would have happened? Revisionist history. But yeah, I don't think you're going to get an alliance of 10 next season to start out of the gate. Which then, you know, when you have 10, that yeah, there's only 6 people to pull from. Of course, the same people are going to get up each week.
Yeah, because you have the detonators, and then you have, you know, the former members of the bomb squad proper with Amber and Caleb sort of in the mix. And then you also have the side alliance of that you have Christine has, you know, Nicole and Hayden, and they're sort of aligned with the, you know, bomb squad / detonators group as well. So you just sort of have like this big, you know, amoeba-like thing with all these people in it. It only leaves a couple of people to potentially go up on the block, and you have to come up with 4 people every week. So it's just been, you know, repetitive that it's the same 4 people every week. But I wonder if this was a normal season of Big Brother where we have sort of the house is more in 2 sides, where, you know, you didn't have people like the, you know, the Joeys of the world just sort of like driving their game into the ground, you know, from the get-go. If there was more of a resistance to the bomb squad, I wonder if this would be more interesting.
Yeah, and I think we would have seen that if not for Devin. I think, you know, Joey was right to try and come up with this girls' alliance to battle the boys' alliance. He just, you know, wasn't savvy enough to realize that there were 2 girls had been pulled in. But imagine if Devin hadn't pulled them in. Then, you know, you might have seen a boys versus girls season. And I also think just the 2-day launch, I think helped create this kind of like, you know, 8-person alliance at the beginning. Yeah, they didn't stick with it. And it's not like in Canada with like the first 5, you know, it was like, you know, oh, we're the first 5, let's be an alliance. But I think people want to have some sort of alliance, even if it's in name only. And I think that was a really good way of being introduced with the Battle of the Block to maybe set up this us 8 versus you 8, even if it wasn't official. It was a way to at least get the ball rolling. And I think if they do the same thing next year, and I actually do hope they do the 2-night launch next season, because I enjoyed it in the sense that I got to know the 8 people a little bit better. I didn't have to, you know, figure out 16 people at once. So I did like that aspect of it. I think it was a good idea. Not all these ideas work. Sometimes they only need a little bit of a tweaking. And I think this is one that only needs a little bit of a tweaking. I don't think you can write it off based on the fact that you had one delusional person in there who screwed it all up.
Well, I know you're a fan of the BB UK. Is that where do you like that they did the 2-night load-in, like on the UK version?
Yeah, I like the BB UK, and I only watch BB UK for like the first 3 or 4 weeks, because after I don't like the fact that the fans vote in that show who gets, you know, voted out of the house, and to me that's not something I'm interested in. And I find the first few weeks really interesting, and then after that I just lose interest, because you know people start voting out people that they hate, and you need the villain. You want the villain to be, you know, defeated by the house, not just, oh, he said something and we don't like him, so he's out of the house, and now you're left with all the boring people. When you do that, you get a season with the friendship as the people who are left, and oh boy, I don't ever want to see another friendship alliance making it. But no. You know, and then that happened on its own, but I think that's the exception, not the rule. And in the UK, I think that usually is what ends up happening.
Well, I know this season I feel bad, because I know it got really crazy after I stopped podcasting about it, but Kurt and Mallory Beasley are podcasting about it on Reality TV Rehap Ups every week, and I've been following that, and I missed all the sex. I'm kicking myself like Cody with, I need like a string to pull to kick myself in the butt for not keeping up with BBUK all summer.
Yeah, you know, I will say, if you haven't ever seen the show, it's worth watching one episode just because their announcer guy cracks me the heck up with 1:30 a.m.
Jolly.
Jolly is talking to Steven about why she doesn't like Kimberly.
Yeah, that guy's great. All right, let's talk about BBUS. And so let's get into talking about the 12 archetypes. And so if you've never heard one of these podcasts before, so AJ in his first book, How Fantasy Sports Explains the World, talked about that there are 12 ideal personalities that you should have in any fantasy league. Also, you compared it to the 12 apostles, right, for Jocasta?
Yeah, exactly. She should probably appreciate that. Yeah.
So very, very much so. So there are 12 ideal personalities that you want to have in the perfect fantasy league or in any group of 12. And so when we look at these 12 people who are left in the Big Brother game, we're going to try to match up the 12 ideal personalities that you'd want to have in your fantasy league or your Big Brother competition with the 12 personalities that AJ has described in his book. And you want me to give it a quick rundown?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Okay. There's the diplomat. There are the two parts of the marriage of convenience. There's the mad scientist. There is the X factor. There is the idiot savant. There is the old reliable. There's the narcissist. There's the loose cannon. There's the cheerleader. There's the ninja, and there's fresh meat. Okay, and then we'll go into a little bit more of describing what each of those are as we get to them. So, AJ, do you want to take us through your list of the 12 archetypes and start us off?
Excellent. And yes, we are going to run through these in reverse order of the likelihood of the archetype winning. Now, I just want to point out, as we do every season, that doesn't mean that the person I'm going to reveal first as having the worst chance can't win. Any of these people can win the game. And you can take a really poor archetype, an archetype with little odds of winning, and win the game. In fact, that's exactly what Andy Heron did last season. I'll get to him in a minute. But this is just the likelihood of the archetype to win. You can throw a perfect game and be a lousy pitcher. That doesn't mean you can't win. It's just these are the likelihood. As we get closer to the top of this hierarchy, you're going to see more winners from the past fitting these archetypes because it's just more likely for this type of a personality to win. It doesn't mean it's impossible, just more likely. And eventually when we do our draft, we're probably not going to use this as our draft order because, again, you can have a really good person at the bottom of the list. It just means the road is harder for them, but they could be up to the task.
Yeah. You know, AJ, I'm just looking at the show page for our podcast from last year's BB, and that is just a very funny thing that I had found that on that episode I checked in with Brian after the podcast, and there was somebody had posted, there was a big controversy that somebody had posted on Facebook that Amanda was the good friend of Allison Grodner and that the season was being rigged so that Amanda was going to win. And people were worked up about that. It's just funny, you know, the stuff that we get really concerned about during the Big Brother season, and then time goes by and we sort of forget about it.
Indeed.
Okay. All right. So let's go ahead and kick us off here with the number 12.
All right. Number 12 is fresh meat. Fresh meat really has no clue what they're doing. Fresh meat probably doesn't even understand they're in a game at all at times. Fresh meat was probably a recruit as opposed to someone who really actively sought it out. But having said that, sometimes it's just someone who's just a complete and utter moron and thinks they understand the game when they don't. Fresh meat can stick around for a very long time because, you know, who better to drag with you to the end of the game than someone who really has no chance of putting up an argument for themselves. So, that doesn't mean that this person is going to be the next person to be evicted. But fresh meat is someone who has very little respect from fans and house guests alike, usually.
Right. Okay, so who is this season's fresh meat? I feel like we have a couple of possibilities here.
There are a couple of possibilities, but I'm going to it's Jocasta. Yeah, Jocasta just anyone who's going to base, I'm all for people, you know, having their faith.
Sure.
And that's great, but you can't play Big Brother and you know, praise the Lord for a move when really it's praising Donnie for getting you off the block.
Yeah, Donnie really got the short shrift in that deal where basically, yeah, God got all the thanks. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, God. But it was Donnie.
Yeah, I mean, I just find it very funny that when Jocasta did quote unquote win the Battle of the Block last week, you know, she's sitting on the sideline having been eliminated and. No, you didn't do anything to get yourself off the block. It was just dumb luck. And that's kind of Fresh Meat's perspective there is like they think they're doing things, but they're not. They think they understand what the game is, and they don't.
Yeah. I have to say also with Jocasta, you know, Donnie last night thanked God in his speech for being on the block. Do you think that Donnie and Jocasta have a three-way alliance with God?
I think his arm's too short to box with God. So, of course, he might as well join the alliance. No, I think Donnie is we'll get to him later on when we get to his archetype. I think Donnie was just being very savvy in trying to say the right things to the right people. Because if he does believe there's this big alliance up against them, then the only way to defeat it is at some point to build a counter rebellion. And, you know, that's playing, preaching to the choir, as it were. You know, you keep Jocasta on your side if you say what she wants to hear.
Yeah. Anytime you're dealing with Jocasta, you're always preaching to the choir.
Indeed.
Okay. So let's go to number 11. So, yeah, I think that, you know, in this instance, I think that probably Jocasta and the archetype both probably fall into probably 12 out of 12, not to give anything away on my draft board.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see. But number 11 is the ninja. And the ninja is someone who, if you were to list the cast members off the top of your head, this is the one you're probably not going to remember is even in the game.
Yeah.
You know, what is your name? I think this one's pretty obvious as well. It's Victoria. It's just someone who doesn't seem to be, you know, I don't watch the live feeds, and I forgot to say, I don't know what's going on in the live feeds. I don't care to know what's going on in the live feeds. It's just not how I want to watch the show. I have no problem if you do. It's just not for me. I want to see the show as the story that the producers are telling, and that to me is where I find the entertainment in it. But, you know, from what I've heard, she's not much on the live feeds either. Very, very little pop, very little buzz there. You know, last season, it was Andy who was filling the ninja role as well, because, you know, on the TV show especially, like, he never seemed to be involved in any of the conversations. He'd always show up at the end and poke his head in, but, you know, he wasn't really doing anything or saying anything much on the live feeds at the time on the show at the time when we did this. And it's very hard for someone who's kind of an invisible player to win the game, simply because they are invisible. And part of the game plan in Andy's case was to kind of be invisible, mm-hmm. and to be behind the scenes, which is why I thought his victory was very impressive, because to come from he's the first ninja to win, in my opinion. You know, obviously people can argue over the archetypes, but he's the first ninja to win and the lowest by far of any seed to win, if you will. Upsets happen, though. But I don't think Victoria has the savvy to pull off an Andy victory by any stretch of the imagination. You know, if she weren't nominated, I don't think she would I don't think I'd know her name if she hadn't been on the block this week and battling out for the power of veto, to be honest with you. My wife doesn't watch the show as religiously as I do, but she watches it with me, and you know, just last week she was like, who is that? And sure enough, that's a ninja.
Yeah. You know, I had Andy on the show this week, and I thought that he really put it into words very well about how he consciously tried to not be the center of attention last year. And I thought that was a really interesting way to talk about a reality show. I think Kim Spradlin has said this sort of thing also, where, you know, that it was they're intentionally trying to, you know, be under the radar. And I don't think that there's any intent on what Victoria is trying to do. I just think she has not been interesting in her time there. So, you know, there's two ways to sort of look at the ninja, where one is the person who you just don't even know they're there because they suck. And then there's the other one where the person is trying to downplay, you know, that, you know, consciously trying to hide as opposed to just, you know, hiding in plain sight because they're just such a non-factor.
Yeah, and I think Andy was the first person to attempt it, really, that kind of went in with an active plan. And I think he was followed after, and for those who watch Big Brother Canada, I think Neda did a really good job of being the ninja as well, of just trying to be under the radar for as long as possible. You know, in the past, you know, you're talking about the likes of Gen City. You know? It's like that, there's not really an active plan to be this non-entity. And Victoria is unfortunately a non-entity. And you know, yeah, you know, people can use her for numbers and things like that. And, you know, who knows? But yeah, it's not looking good for Victoria. But I think we all know that. Anyone who watches the show.
Yeah. All right. Let's not spend any more time on her. She's got more time in this podcast than she's gotten on the entire show this season.
Yeah. Spend more time on who? What are you talking about?
All right.
Number 10 is the cheerleader. And the cheerleader is, for Big Brother purposes, I also like to call it the house mom. Someone who's just, you know, kind of taking care of everybody's feelings and someone who is kind of, you know, always there to make sure that everyone's feeling okay and trying their best to raise the spirits of the house, to always rooting for everybody. Now, this person can be a conniver. This person can be in alliances, certainly. That doesn't, you know, remove them from that. But I think this is someone who you would call the mom of the house. And then, you know, Brittany could have filled this role, certainly, if she had stuck around, not just because she is a mom. I don't know if you heard that she's a mom, and Devin had kids, too. I don't know if you heard this.
Yes.
But in this case, I think I actually listened to the podcast you did last night with Ian Terry and Brian Lynch. And you actually mentioned this person as perhaps being the mom of the house. And I totally agreed with you. This was on my list. And it's Frankie.
Yes. No, I AJ, I have to say this. You know, sometimes we disagree, but right now I feel like I'm right on board with. I'm picking up what you're putting down here so far on this list. I agree.
Yeah, and it's even just such a thing as like, you know, he went to Donnie after he was nominated and said like, yeah, Donnie, are you okay? You know, that's cool. You know, and he's that type of person. I think just genuinely type of person. And I think he's playing a game and he's trying to be manipulative and all this. But I think your true colors kind of do shine through a little bit. And I think, you know, on the surface, I think he does care about these people. And I think that's what's showing through. The problem he's going to have is that, you know, when mom is being nice and wonderful and kind and everything, it's really, it's hard for that person to make a move, a backstabbing move and keep that persona. I think it leads itself to the feelings of betrayal. And that's what gives the cheerleader the obstacles. Either they don't make the moves or when they do make the moves, it's seen as a betrayal because everyone thought they were the person to take care of them. So I think that's where the cheerleader's problems come into play.
It's tough because, you know, it's easier to sort of like make these big moves and sort of stab people in the back when you're sort of like the young, you know, single guy, when you're like the Zach or some of these other sort of, you know, younger guys that we've seen play the game, you know, super aggressively and sort of stab people in the back. But when you're the mom of the house, and we've had people like Shelly who's been in this role or Dawn on Survivor, when that person betrays you, like it hurts a lot more than when somebody like, you know, a Zach, for instance, ends up, you know, screwing you over.
Exactly. I think that's what he's up against. He's kind of positioned himself. It's a good position to be in because you get a lot of people who will protect you and want to keep you around the game. But at the same time, if you get any blood on your hands, it can be seen as like the worst kind of betrayal.
Yeah, that's a tough spot to be in. I wonder if, you know, how Frankie is going to be able to navigate that as the summer goes on.
Indeed.
Okay. Yeah. And so... Yeah, and as you talked about, I did think, yeah, Derek and Frankie, I do think they are sort of like the mom and dad of the house. They have the Team America thing, and so they're sort of have their interests like double mutually aligned between the detonators and also Team America. And so, you know, just in the way that Frankie had to wake up Derek in the middle of the night, and it's like, one of these kids, you won't believe what they're doing now. Cody wants to put Caleb on the block. You better get up. And, you know, just the way that they had to sort of confer and sort of like, okay, we'll figure it all out, don't worry. And
yeah,
so,
absolutely, I'm gonna get dad.
Yeah, I'll get dad right away and let him know.
So Team America, let me just say why I haven't said anything about Team America. I don't I understand we need to have something to keep the crowd thinking that they have some sort of say in what's going on in the house. But please, 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 can we not have it impact the actual results of the game? Don't tell them who to nominate. Don't have them start a fight with between two people that could result in some nominations changing, or just, you know, have them pick the silly task. I like the silly tasks. I think that's fun. I think it's one of the reasons I enjoy Big Brother Canada so much, is because of the silly tasks and, you know, that are delivered by a talking moose. But I like that they're silly and they don't impact the game, and yet you can have some say in it and you know, decide who's doing and everything. That's fine. But yeah, once you start getting into the nominations and then causing fights, like, no. You want to have someone steal clothes. That's great. That's delightful. You know, whatever. Yeah. You give it back and you say, ha ha, it was a goof, you know?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that, you know, Canada, Big Brother Canada does, I think, get that part of the game right, where in the first Big Brother Canada, there was a lot more. And of course, the, you know, Canada was the HOH, was kind of, you know, way more than even we're talking about with this. But the idea of who do you want to see get a chance to do a special challenge and win a party for the house and sort of, you know, have some sort of shenanigans going on, as opposed to, you know, stuff that could really, you know, end somebody's game where we're voting on. Doesn't seem exactly right.
Yeah, I mean, because you know, without America's player, you know, and pulling his strings, Evil Dick doesn't win. So
that's the kind of thing that gets you blown up on Twitter, AJ. I'd be careful. Tread lightly.
I love Evil Dick. I think he's one of my favorite players. I just think it had a direct impact on it. I didn't say I was upset about it.
Okay.
Just because I was rooting for both of them. I was rooting for Eric Stein and Evil Dick, and I just really I'm disappointed that had to be a turning point.
Okay. All right. Let's go to number 9, AJ.
Number 9 is the narcissist. They're sexy and they know it. They're good looking. They think they're God's gift to the universe. Whether it's you know, guy or girl, it's just someone who thinks they deserve everything that's coming to them, whatever they want, because of their good looks and because they're such a wonderful person. And so for this season, that would be Caleb.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, well, he of course he deserves Amber because he's Caleb, you know.
Yeah, when he was talking with Cody about that, and he had that conversation, and he was like, look, I'm a good-looking guy, you're a good-looking guy, like, you know, he's just very, very quick to volunteer that information.
Yeah, and you know, usually someone who's like, you know, is good in challenges and can talk about, you know, in that sense, it's not bluster. If you are, you know, if you're good in challenges, you're good in challenges. You know, sometimes it's apparent, but, wow. I mean, he's a psychopath. He's a psychopath narcissist. That's a subset of the narcissists.
Did you give any consideration for Caleb as the ninja when he went stealth mode cowboy?
You know, I thought about it. Yeah, I kind of did. You know, certainly no one mentioned the fact that he was stroking a knife. but then again, they did notice when he left, because you could send, or maybe, did they notice, or they just like, was it just like, why is there suddenly a sense of relief in this room?
I think they definitely were like, okay, like that was totally weird, right? That he just sort of came in and, you know, held a dagger and then figuratively like shot daggers at Cody.
Yeah. I mean, the narcissist is usually, well, not usually, but I think the narcissist has a tendency to not be too bright also, because they're so focused on themselves, and so they miss signals. You know, they think that they're, in Caleb's case, think that they have influence in the house when they really don't. I mean, Caleb still thinks the bomb squad is running full cylinders as of last night anyway, so yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough situation. You know, it's probably the closest that you could, you know, sort of compare it to. It's like if you were like in college and your roommate, you know, was, you know, friends with a girl that you had a crush on, and who is, so it's like, you know, in real life, if this happened, you know, it wouldn't be in your face all the time, and you could sort of like escape from it. But, you know, these people all live together 24/7. They don't see anybody else. So it's a super awkward situation.
Right, and I think that also lends itself to why these 12 personalities tend to to emerge, because this is what happens when 12 people are put in this, you know, theoretical vacuum. I think people tend to fall into one of these personalities because of that, you know, and there is no escape. You can't, and in Caleb's case, he doesn't have a friend there who's going to come up and say, like, dude, this is what's going on, because they all obviously they don't share our mutual interest. The mutual interest would be if, you know, hey, we'll both win the $500,000. That's not what happens in this game. It's everyone man for himself, or at least eventually it becomes that, or else we have a really bad season.
Okay. Number eight
is Old Reliable. This is usually a player who tries to skate through without getting any blood on their hands. It's the guy who's going to throw the comps. Someone who's, that's generally what Old Reliable does. They could win competitions. They do well in competitions. They hang on for a while, and then they usually end up throwing it because of the nature of the game. So you kind of know what to expect with this person. You know they're going to perform well. They could save their skin if they were pressed to do so. But, you know, with no reason to do that, they're probably just going to throw it. What you see is what you get.
Okay, so who would that be in Big Brother 16?
And this is where some people are going to have an issue, but I'll, you know, well, it's my letter. But I think it's Hayden.
Hayden, okay.
I think we've seen that he's capable and willing to throw competitions. Maybe he just tripped on his own, but sure. But like in the first competition, you know, I can hang on all day, and you know, and I'll drop, you know, whatever. He's capable of winning challenges, but he's not winning challenges unless he has to. When he's on the block, he'll win, sure, but also I just you know, he's not involving himself in any of these alliances. He's kind of just hanging back, and he's just kind of like, you know, letting the game come to him, and I think that's part of Old Reliable as well. It's like, you know, it's not that he's not trying, it's not that he doesn't know what's going on, it's just that he's not going to make a move. He's kind of happy where he is, and you know, that's kind of where he is.
Yeah, I don't know if we have a good Old Reliable on this season. I think this might be, you know, the first one where we have to sort of, you know, shove a square peg in a round hole, because, you know, typically the Big Brother cast is not old. And so it's hard to come up with the Old Reliable, the person who's our rancher Rick, who's just sort of like the, you know, grizzled old guy that you can count on him to sort of, you know, just go with whatever the vote's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, you know, certainly, you know, in Big Brother 14, it was Boogie, because, you know, he was the kind of guy who you knew what you were expecting, not only because we'd seen him play so many times, but like, yeah, Boogie's going to take the money if there's money being offered, and he's going to drop out. He doesn't want the power. He's like, whatever, man. Like, you know, that's kind of how Mike Boogie would do it. You know, Spencer last season was kind of the guy who, like, you know, all right, you know, here I am. This is what I'm going to do. And he was kind of the old guy role, I think. Yeah, we don't really, really have one this year, but because the cast is so young. Mm-hmm. So it's a casting thing. Perhaps Reliable.
Okay.
What you see is what you get. WYSIWYG would be like the other name for this in the Big Brother house, when they tend to skew towards the beautiful people.
Yeah, that's what you get with your pedicab driver, not a farmer.
Yes, pedicab, not petty cab. He's not petty.
All right, so let's go to number seven.
Number seven is the idiot savant. And there's two ways to look at this. Sometimes it's the person who is thriving in the house, despite the fact that they've made wrong decisions all along the way. Sometimes it's just someone who's a little bit quirky, who seems to be a little bit dimmer than perhaps they really are. It's kind of like someone who you don't expect to be a power player, but you don't necessarily think that they're going to be eliminated right away. It's just, there's a disconnect there with what they say and what they do. They're easily manipulated. Usually they're always hemming and hawing. I'm not sure if I made the right decision. I don't know. But in the end, even though you probably don't agree with the choice they finally make, it ends up working, and they're still in the game, and they're still in a better position for having made this decision that shouldn't have worked out in their favor.
Okay. So who would that be?
And that would be Nicole this year.
Nicole.
Yeah.
The person who doesn't know if Oregon is a state.
Yeah. She fits into that aspect of the role, that kind of quirky, you know, Jordan-esque kind of like oh, that's cute. What? Isn't she adorable for what she's saying? That kind of thing. But also, I mean, I think she's made some decisions, like going to Donnie and saying, you know, confiding in him and telling him about, you know, everything that's going on with the bomb squad and everything. And then the very next minute, like, oh, but now I have to put him up because he's been telling other people about it. And, you know, well, now you didn't tell me not to tell anybody, did you? So, you know, there's a lot of that decision should not have worked in her favor, and yet she's fine. You know, she doesn't strike me as having a full grasp of what's going on, and yet she seems to be in a really strong situation. It's a strong piece of, like, you know, that little three person alliance that's going on with Christine and Hayden and her, and obviously her and Hayden, whether it's a showmance or not, I don't know. We've kind of only seen the tip of the iceberg there. Who knows? You know, as Ian said last night, Ian and Ashley at this point of the game could have been considered something, and that didn't work out. So.
Yeah, but I think I think that these two are a bit closer to making sex than Ian and Ashley were. With all due respect to the esteemed winner of Big Brother 14.
Yeah, and by the way, I did watch last night. He's looking like a young David Duchovny, my friend.
Oh.
I'm thinking he just needs a poster behind it. The truth is out there. I want to believe that Nicole and Hayden will not be a showmance. Yeah.
will Nicole eventually be the Scully to his Mulder? Did I get it backwards?
Yeah, she would be the Scully. He'd be the Mulder. Yeah. Except it took a really long time for that to be a storyline.
Once
it did, nobody watched the show anymore. So.
All right. Well, we'll see. Okay. Well, I don't have a problem with Nicole there as the idiot savant. I'm interested to see how you're going to get out of this marriage of convenience, though, because I feel like I don't know if you painted yourself into a corner. I'm eager to see how you figure the rest of this out.
Okay, very good, very good. And so am I.
All right.
No, there's a plan. Maybe I'm the idiot savant. I'm sure, yeah, the comment, he's an idiot. I don't know what he's talking about. He doesn't know how to do these 12 personalities, even though he invented it. I'm sorry, that was my dumb commenter voice. I apologize. So number six, we're going to skip on our list, because number six is part of the marriage of convenience, and
okay.
I don't like to reveal the second half of it because it generally gives people an idea as to what the other half is, and the other half is number one on our list.
Can you talk about what the marriage of convenience is and why one part is lower in the power rankings than the other?
Yeah, the marriage of convenience is simply two people. There's two different ways you can look at it. Sometimes it's just two people who get thrown together into an alliance because they're the only people left. Sometimes that's a situation where it's like, you know, the main alliance hates person A and person B, so they realize we have to bond together. It doesn't happen often, but that's a possibility. Actually, I think that's what happened in Big Brother 15, where Candace and Howard kind of were thrust together because of all the nonsense that was going on and the comments and what people were saying. I think that was just something that a relationship that forged because of that. But usually it's a showmance, and there's more than one showmance in every house. It doesn't necessarily have to be the dominant showmance or the one that's getting the packages listed about them. But generally, if it's a showmance, the reason there's such a gap between the two is because there's usually a dominant member of the showmance, someone who's pulling the strings and telling the other person who to vote for. That's usually what happens in these situations. There's an A and a B and a clear power distinguishing. And because of that, if the two of them do make it to the finale, person A usually, you know, the more dominant one usually will get the votes because they can argue a better case of having drugged the other person along. And also, if it's down to three, you want to stab that person in the back before it gets to two. It's usually the more dominant person who's going to do that. So that's why there's such a disconnect. Even though they're working together, they usually keep their votes constant the whole way through. It doesn't have to be a showmance. It could be a bromance. It could, you know, it could be a you know, Dan Giesling, Memphis kind of situation there, Renegades. So, you know, there are different forms of this. Typically, if there's a showmance, it is the showmance. It doesn't always have to be, though.
Okay. Not necessarily the showmance.
Right.
Okay, so let's skip number six and let's go to number five.
Hey, number five, I think Ian predicted this one correctly last night when we were talking about the loose cannon. The person who is insane and unpredictable doesn't necessarily could just, you know, blow up the alliance any second, convince their alliance to do something, and then, you know, vote in the opposite direction. You just have no idea what the loose cannon is going to do. They're just crazy, unpredictable. And they can slap their hands together whenever they talk, either in an X pattern or in a gator chomp. But yeah, we're talking about Zach.
Yeah, my son does that also.
And your son's like probably as intelligible as Zach sometimes.
Yes, okay, yeah, I agree. Zach is the loose cannon.
Yeah, and generally speaking, I like the loose cannon. I mean, you need a loose cannon in the game, and they're always fun to watch. Sometimes they use their powers for good and not for evil, but I like the unpredictability of it. I like someone who's not afraid to just, you know, put themselves out there and, you know, confront the leader of the alliance and say, you know, I don't agree with you, when that's the dumbest thing you could possibly do in the game, quite frankly. But the fact that they're willing to do it, it's fun. They're good television. But I don't think we need to explain it any further than that. I think Zach is living it up to the loose cannon. People on the show have called him a loose cannon. People reviewing it. My goal is to get people on the show more and more in the diary rooms to be calling these people by their archetypes. And loose cannon is an easy one to kind of like to catch on.
Yeah, I agree. And Zach, he could be the sort of like unstable element in this equation that sort of, you know, brings down the whole season. And I mean that in a good way, where, you know, mom and dad of Derek and Frankie, they have everything set up. They want there to be order. They don't want there to be anything, you know, that they don't expect to happen. But Zach is just sort of, you know, that chaos Zach, and he's the one that he, you know, really wants to, you know, make good TV. And you like good TV, right, AJ?
I do. I like good TV. I like good TV.
Yeah. So I think that Zach likes good TV, and I think that he wants, you know, I feel like just like Arlie on Big Brother Canada, I think that, you know, Zach is playing for all stars, and, you know, he wants there to be exciting things to happen, and he's not afraid to have confrontations. And I think he could really shake things up along the way. And the good thing is that he's in the majority alliance, so we don't have to worry about them turning on him anytime soon.
Yeah. And I think this goes to why we do this at 12, because, you know, if we had done this at the beginning in 16 and trying to see, you know, all the candidates for this, I mean, obviously Devin was also a loose cannon because, you know, who knew what he was going to do? It was a different kind of loose cannon chip. I mean, he was just, I think, completely insane in the house, whereas Zach is, like you said, competing for all stars and doing it on purpose. There's a purpose to his insanity, I think. But, you know, you can tell that you can't have a season full of three or four loose cannons. It doesn't work. And eventually, at the beginning of the season, if you do have them, there's a reason why one of them ends up going. And I think there's a reason why Zach was so gung-ho about getting Devin out of the house, is because he recognized, that's what I want to be. I want to be that character. You can't be that character. At least on some subconscious level. I was like, he's me. He's my threat.
Yeah, so basically Devin was stealing the loose cannon role from Zach, and he said, I need to be the guy who is, you know, just going off the rails.
Yeah, I think it's a part of it. I mean, it's on a subconscious level, I think, because a lot of this is just, you know, like, you know, theory and personality theory. But I think that like attracts like. In some cases, it's opposite poles of the magnet, and you got to repel. I think that was just a case where they were going to repel no matter what, because they were both kind of suited for this spot right here.
Okay, repelling magnets, I like that.
So we're up to number four on our list, and that is the diplomat. And the diplomat, it can be someone who is a swing vote in a lot of situations, someone who is like, if there's two major power groups in the house, it's the person who is most easily able to go between the two and work out to broker some sort of deal. I mean, that's where it kind of comes from. That kind of works more in Survivor, though, I think, where there's a little more tribal alliance and things like that because of the structure of the show. But generally speaking, it's someone who's just liked by everybody. It's the person who never gets into arguments, who always is there. People feel bad when they nominate this person. People just want to hang with this person and isn't necessarily seen as a threat to win because of any game moves, but a threat to win because they're so just gosh darn likable with the beard and sitting there and making sure that you know that you can vote me out of the house, but I'll still love you in the morning. Have a good sleep.
I won't be upset with you if you did what was in your heart. Yes. So, okay. So Donnie is on the board.
I'm beginning to think that was the bunny rabbit all the time. Yeah, Donnie is the diplomat. I mean, I think that's clear. Everybody loves Donnie. And what I like about Donnie's game, I mean, how can you not love Donnie? But I mean, what I like about his game, like, I don't know if you noticed this in last night's show. It was a brief shot, but after Brittany was evicted and everybody's looking at the memory wall, Donnie was a step back and he was looking at everybody else. And I'm thinking to myself, I just love that, because to me that shows that he is actually watching everybody else's faces to try and get a hold of how they're reacting, to try and piece together what's going on around him. I don't know if he's going to be able to put it all together, but we've seen glimpses in the diary room where he's trying to suss out, I think someone is telling Cody what to do. And I think he's really showing that he knows what's going on, and that would be a perfect opportunity to, like, look into people's eyes and see who's reacting and how they're reacting.
Yeah, I mean, that's all good on paper. I mean, in practice, I mean, I don't feel like the bomb squad was necessarily like a covert spy organization. Like, I feel like he should have been onto that probably faster than he was. You know, I'm not sure if he is picking up on everything going on with the detonators. I definitely think that his instincts are right, that something is afoot, but I don't think he really has the, you know, wherewithal to be able to figure out exactly what's going on. Like, he's not a Dan Giesling.
No, and I agree with you, but I'm saying I love the fact that he's actually trying. I see that he's trying to piece it together. I don't know if all the puzzle pieces are going to fit for him. He's going to come to some revelation, but I think is part of the reason, as a fan of the show, that you have to love the way Donnie plays the game, simply because, you know, he's an everyman. He's like, I may not be as good as Dan Giesling. Who is? That's a bar that's tough to reach, but, you know, the fact that he's just conscious that there is a game being played, and that he kind of can feel that something's off. And, like, you know, he's looking at people. He's throwing those questions at Cody to see if he can get a read on him. He knows that at the memory wall, I think, is a perfect opportunity to, you know, or after a competition, after HOH, to see who's hugging who. And you know, especially last night's competition, where it's like, I'm going to nominate this person and this person to be next. You know, like, okay, you can get information out of that. And I think he's aware, and I think he's watching. And I like the fact that at least he's got a fighter's chance.
Yeah. Maybe could this be a new CBS procedural that comes out this fall, where it's like, he's a mild-mannered groundskeeper, and he knows something is going on. He doesn't know quite what, but he's looking for clues. Join us this fall for The Groundskeeper.
He's a cut above the rest.
Yes, yeah.
The number one new show is The Groundskeeper mowing down the competition. Yeah.
The audience is checking out The Groundskeeper, and it's growing. Like a weed.
Followed by an all-new Zanky.
Yeah. All right, so Donnie, he is America's favorite so far, and I think that that's scary if you're another player in the house.
Yeah. But, you know, it's just a question of when do they decide that you can hurt his feelings and it's okay, because he's going to win if he sticks around to the end.
Yeah. Because, I mean, this guy, he is quickly becoming the Big Brother version of Rupert. And that is a scary proposition on a show like Big Brother.
Indeed.
Because sometimes, you know, this person that everybody loves, you know, things just, the ball tends to bounce their way. And I would be very, very wary of that if I was one of the other players in the house.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised to see one of these challenges where you're allowed to, you have to transport a liquid or something. And, you know, he uses full use of the beard for more surf. You could only use your face.
Yeah.
One of those challenges that's fixed but not fixed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, so let's go to number three on the list.
Number three on the list is the X Factor.
Okay.
And this is the person who is most unlike anybody else. Sometimes that could mean it's the only gay person in the house full of all straight people. Sometimes it could be, you know, if there's, you know, the only Asian person in a house full, you know, all white people. Like there's something different, visibly different. From everybody else, you're the only relative of a former player in a house and win MVP every week, and your name is Alyssa. You know, that's something that makes you different from everybody else. Or it's someone who's just like a super fan, like someone who just knows this game inside and out, and that's where you're different from everybody else who just maybe saw like one season of the show. Having an intimate knowledge of the game and being a super fan, like Ian Terry was certainly the X factor of his season, and proved, as he's the first super fan X factor to win, that it can be done. And generally speaking, the downfall is sometimes in the competitions. I think Ian won is because he was actually able to win the competitions he needed to. Otherwise, he would not have. But so this season, the super fan and outcast, quite frankly, is Christine.
Okay.
I think, you know, she's kind of like, you know, in a weird spot in terms of she's lucked into a lot of the alliances that she's fallen into. But she's aware that they're alliances because she knows the game inside and out. And I think she knows where she is. And I know I don't think she's necessarily as good as past super fans in terms of expressing it to the camera. Her camera presence isn't there, so you don't necessarily get a feel for the fact that she knows what's going on. But I think she does, and I think she knows that she has to make moves, and she knows that she's in a good spot, and she doesn't want to rock the boat. And just even the fact that she was able to build this little side alliance. She's the only person who's really thinking ahead and moves ahead. In the way that a super fan would, and so that's what I really like her in this spot.
Okay, so Christine is the double X factor. She is a big fan. I guess Nicole's a fan too. Donnie's also a fan. So you know, but for the most part, not a ton of fan. I guess Derek also.
Yeah, and also she's like, you know, she's the only girl in the detonators, like, you know, like she's
probably the better case.
And that's where it also, I mean, she's able to fit herself in to situations where you wouldn't expect her to be, you know, accepted in. But she's still you look at on the surface like, oh, she's the outsider. She's absolutely the outsider. If you had a guess on a ranking of the five detonators, she's probably five.
Yeah.
In terms of in the minds of the other four, certainly.
Yes, she's the, you know, lone woman in the all guys alliance.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, good. I like that better. Okay,
so
we got three people left. We still have Derek on the board. We still have Cody on the board. We still have the beautiful and woman you just want to get to know better, Amber.
Exactly. And so we're up to number two on our list, and number two is the mad scientist.
Yes.
The mad scientist, the puppeteer, the person who's pulling all the strings behind the curtain that nobody knows that they're in control, but they've got this house pretty much on lockdown where they want it to be. You know, at some point, generally the downfall for a mad scientist is that they pull one string too many, the puppets start talking to each other, and the cat gets let out of the bag. But usually every season there's one person who tries to be the next Dr. Will, the Shadow Master, and Derek is certainly doing a really good job of filling that role this season.
Okay, Derek, the mad scientist. What sort of mad scientist things do you attribute to Derek so far?
Well, I mean, part of it is the way he's able to get people to come to the conclusion to do what he wants them to do without having to tell them what to do. I think getting Caleb to nominate himself was a perfect example of this puppet mastery that he was doing. I mean, that's what he wanted Caleb to go up. And he reads people so well that he knew exactly how to tell the story and even broach the subject with Caleb to get Caleb to do it without having to ask him to do it.
Yeah,
I think that was a perfect example of puppet mastery. I just, you know, even just like going up to Cody and saying, oh, yeah, I see your point of view. But, you know, what about putting Donnie up instead of, you know, doing that now? Because that's what he wanted to have happen. And it happened. I mean, it wasn't a hard sell. But, you know, I've seen people try and be the puppet master and, you know, it doesn't work because people end up not doing it. You know, I mean, certainly that you can be a bad puppet master.
And I mean by that, I'm not saying it wasn't hard to do. What I'm saying is that he didn't come in there and he didn't throw his weight around and bully Cody into doing it. It was a very soft sort of like, hey man, this is your decision. You got to do what's in your heart, but I just think that this is the better way to go because I think that's better for your game. But ultimately, it's your decision, and you do what you want. And it seemed like he really didn't hit him over the head with the sledgehammer. It was very much a gentle sort of sales move, and yeah, I thought he was very good in that moment.
He's totally able to do the Giesling like Jedi mind tricks, throw the mist, and get people to do what he wants them to do without them realizing that he's just got them to change their mind. And I certainly, of the people who are left in the game, he's certainly the one who is the most likely to have his way for the next 3 or 4 weeks. I don't know. Once we get towards the end game and there are fewer people, it might be a little bit more difficult because people are much more willing to drop an alliance for their own best interests. But he's certainly the one I would say is on top of everything that's going on in the alliance. The people in the alliance are turning to him and looking to him for the answers, and he's not taking credit for doing it. Like, even just the way he threw the HOH competition to Frankie this week, I thought was done in such a great way because you knew he didn't want to win this week.
Yeah.
He didn't want any more blood on his hands. He screwed up when he won the last time and because he wanted to see pictures of his family, and then I think he got caught up in the moment. But he didn't want to win, and he was like, what better way to do it without making it look like, oh, I'm in an alliance with Frankie? I mean,
yeah, I'm such a great guy.
Yeah, I mean, he took advantage of the situation, but hey, that's the hand that he was dealt. You want to see pictures of your granddad? Okay, I'm going to stand back here and let you win. Okay, dude. Like, and who's going to fault him for that? Who's going to think there's underhanded there? Especially in that house when you got people like, the Jocasta God Alliance. I mean, she's going to like, oh, what a decent move. You know, she's not looking in for strategy. Even Donnie's probably going to, oh, well, that was very sweet of him. You know, like he's not thinking anything underhanded there. You know?
Yeah. I felt like it was a little bit much from Derek. Like he could have just done it. I feel like when somebody has to, and we saw with Alec in Big Brother Canada when he did the same thing. You know, it's like when you have to make a show of like, hey everybody, look what I'm doing. You know, he could have just done it, and but he had to let everybody see that he was doing it. Makes me feel like
I disagree on that one. I mean, I agree what you're saying in the grand scheme of things. I think just because the whole grandfather thing was so front and center, I honestly think that was an okay way of doing it. If that hadn't happened and he was just throwing it to him, that would be an awful way to throw the competition. I think he really genuinely wanted to do it to throw the competition, but also I think he genuinely wanted to have a personal moment there. And I think in that sense, I think that was kind of cool. And I think he also did, he framed it in a way that the whole house was going to notice it. Certainly, but I think that was a situation where you could do it that way. I mean, he's thinking about that and perception a lot. I mean, even the way he picked the two people when he was like, all right, who hasn't gone yet? Who hasn't been up here yet? I mean, yeah, I think he knew who hadn't been gone yet, but I think just to frame it that way, there's nothing going on here. I have no ulterior motives in who I'm picking. Who hasn't gone yet? That's a fair way to do things. I think for anyone who's outside of the alliance, I think he's at least throwing the smokescreen out there. And I think just the fact that you're thinking about throwing a smokescreen shows that he's, 10 steps ahead of most of the players.
I still feel like that there was a little bit of trying to, convert that gesture to currency in the game where, it's a thing where he could say to Frankie later, like, hey, didn't I get you the, I threw that competition so you could see your grandfather. So it's sort of like, hey, don't screw me down the road because I gave you, the pictures of your grandfather. And I do feel like, when somebody is playing the game as hard as Derek is playing, that's how I think their mind is thinking, in these moments.
Yeah, it's certainly possible that you're right. Maybe it was
Jocasta that did that, or somebody, you know, even like a, you know, Donnie that did that, where somebody who we don't think of as like a real, you know, schemer in the game, then I would buy it. But the fact that it's Derek and we know, you know, how he's thinking about the game nonstop, I do feel like the way that he did it and the way that he brought it, you know, said it out loud and, you know, that everybody could hear it. You know, I think that he was trying to get points for that. Was it a nice thing to do? Yes. But was he also looking to get points for it? I think so.
Perhaps, or maybe it was just his way of saying, hey, I'm throwing this competition. I don't want to win it. And, well, I can do it this very obvious way, and maybe people will think I'm trying to get currency out of it, but at least they don't think I'm throwing the competitions just to throw a competition. So there's a dual purpose to it as well. I think what was more over the top was Julie asking him the question and saying, well, yes, and I did it even though I will be on slop this week. Like, okay, now that was
martyr.
That was taking it that one step too far, I think. I think that was like, okay.
Yeah, it's, you know, see what a good guy I am.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about this marriage of convenience, because I'm interested to see why you ended up going with these two as the marriage of convenience, which are, by process of elimination, are Cody and Amber. Oh, Caleb is going to be so mad.
Yeah, I did it just to piss Caleb off.
When he listens to this podcast one day.
Yeah, no, I think it is a marriage of convenience in the sense that, I mean, first of all, I do think there's genuine feelings there, at least on some level. You're not that touchy-feely without there being something underneath it. So let's get that right out of the gate. It's a showmance. It may not be in full bloom because Caleb's still in the house, but I think perhaps if Caleb were not in the house, that we will see a different shade of that relationship blooming. And I don't think anyone would have argued with me if Caleb weren't in the house. I mean, certainly they're part of a love triangle. And I think the love triangle aspect of it, the fact that Caleb is there, is kind of forcing them together. Amber might be using it just as a defense mechanism so that Caleb isn't on her all the time.
Whoa. Oh,
Cody, protect me. You know, Cody, protect me. Don't make his sex with me, Caleb. Cody is here. But you know what I mean? I think Cody is a safe haven for Amber, and she's playing it up a little bit, perhaps, to try and keep him. But, I mean, he's not pushing her away by any stretch of the imagination either. And it also is a great excuse for him to try and get rid of Caleb.
Is Amber saying to, you know, is she sort of like the subtext here of, hey, I'm hanging out with Cody. I can't come out and tell you that I don't like you like that, but can you get the hint? Like, is this her way of trying to subtly tell Caleb that she doesn't like him in that way?
I think it's certainly a possibility. Obviously, until we're inside her head, and until, you know, you get to talk to her on, you know, her eviction, that we're not going to know for sure until she starts telling us what she's thinking. And even then, who knows? It's revisionist history at that point, perhaps. But I think it certainly looks that way to me, is that she's definitely taking advantage of the fact that there's this other guy in the house who can protect her from Captain Stalker. And, you know, as such, this is kind of a marriage of convenience, because either it would be a true blown showmance and no one would have an argument with this, or they're only together for show and until Caleb is gone. But in that sense, that is the definition of a marriage of convenience. They're forced together out of circumstance, and it works either way as far as I'm concerned. I the one aspect that is missing is the fact I don't, you know, they're not necessarily voting together as a block, but I think that they still fit the role of being kind of forced to work together for as long as they're in the house.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, that for Cody, he said all week about how, you know, we're just friends, but, you know, he almost completely blew up his game over Amber. Like, this friendship with Amber has been a bad thing for Cody, you know, that I don't know what is so great about being friends being friends with Amber, you know, not to say anything about being more than friends with Amber, but if you're just friends with Amber, that this almost completely tanked his HOH this week by putting up Caleb, and then, you know, God knows what the fallout from that would have been.
Right. Well, absolutely. And I think that's part of the reason why why I like this as being this season's marriage of convenience, because he is kind of sacrificing his game for someone else. And isn't that part of kind of a showman's too, is that, you know, you go in thinking I'm going to win the $500,000 and, you know, then eventually it turns into something else. I mean, sometimes couples can rise above that and last a very long time, but sometimes it turns into Brenchel where, you know, the first time they played, it was like, yeah, we want to try and win, but you know, it's more about no one getting in between her and her man, and that she might not have protected, you know, some other schmo who was there instead of Brandon, you know.
Okay, so who are you putting in the alpha position in the marriage of convenience, and who are you putting in the beta position of the marriage of convenience?
Well, and I think you expressed exactly why Cody has to be in the beta position, because he is not playing the game that he would have played otherwise. He is kind of altering his strategy for Amber in a strange way. I mean, it's this bizarre thing. He considered putting Caleb up because Caleb is someone who Amber is kind of creeped out by, and I don't think he would have done that if she wasn't in charge. She may not be in charge in terms of intent. She may not be in charge in terms of like saying, hey, Cody, you have to do this, but when he's thinking with his other brain, then she's the one who's got hand.
Whoa! There's a lot. There's a lot there, AJ.
We can parse my podcast statements later on, huh?
Yeah, you need hand. You gotta have hand. All right. So we have Amber here in the prime position here of the archetypes
of the archetypes. And let me say, this does not by any stretch of the imagination mean that Amber is the favorite to win the game. It does not mean that I think Amber is going to win this game. What it means is that she is in the personality spot that if she were to play the game at even a competent level, she should win the game, or at least should go a long way. If you don't think that Amber is up to the task, if you think she's, you know, below replacement value or, you know, right on that line, then she won't win. But but she's in a sweet spot where someone who's in this spot should win the game, or should at least make it to, like, you know, Final Four. And anything that is less of that speaks more to Amber's ability to play the game and not the rankings themselves.
Yeah, she is getting more out of this relationship with Cody than Cody is.
Right, and if she didn't have this relationship with Cody, I don't necessarily think she would be in the same position she's in also. I think, you know, certainly she's already being nominated on a regular routine basis, even though she's supposed to be in this alliance. And I think basically we saw the bomb squad said, all right, Caleb's out, Amber's out. Were the detonators, and I think the only reason that she's not on the block, we're in the Britney spot, is because of her relationship with Cody.
Yeah, but she's a physical threat, though.
Oh yeah, she's a physical threat. Absolutely.
Yes, all of America rejoiced when our
all America
threat.
Said so, didn't they? Said she was a
Give those men five give those men five stacks each, right?
Five stacks, baby.
Yeah. All right. So there's our 12 archetypes. Now let's dig in here to this draft. Okay. Are you ready? Anything else
I am
on the
ready.
Archetypes? Okay.
Yeah.
So let's talk about our scoring system. Do we need to make any changes to the scoring system? I believe what we did last year was you got 1 point for being the for advancing a week, basically for not being voted out a week, and I'm not sure if we gave any other points in the scoring system. Okay, so how about this? Let's go. Okay, you get the 1 point for advancing a week, for basically for not being voted out of the house. 2 points for being the last standing HOH, for as long as the battle of the block continues, and then into when there's only one HOH. 1 point for winning the veto. Okay.
Yeah.
And then do you want to do, like we did on Survivor, do you want to do a point for a jury vote or 2 points for a jury vote in the final two?
Well, 1 point, because only two people get there, and that could lopsided.
Let's do no points for winning the game, but 2 points for a jury vote.
Okay, let's do that.
So you basically, if you advance, you get no points for advancing to the final two, but you get points for each jury vote collected in the final two. For a total of, if it was a 7-0 sweep, you could get potentially 14 points for winning the game.
Yeah, that, you know, I think that'll be too big a swing, to be honest, if you get both people in there. How about you get a point, 2 points for like, if you win 4-3, you get 2 points. If you win 7-0, you get 14 points. You know, like.
So, you want it to be by how many points advantage? I mean, if you won the game, you should get 8 points. That if you know you got four votes. I feel like that's not unreasonable if you pick the person who won the game.
All right, that's fine. Let's, whatever.
You gotta reward these winners, AJ.
Okay, two points for, yeah, my only, yeah, I was only thinking if you got the last two people, then that, you know, you got the lock of the 14 points, but then again, I guess you deserve it.
Then get the last two people.
All right, there you go.
All right, so AJ,
if you would have invented Facebook, you would have invented Facebook. I guess.
All right, AJ, so I had the worst record in the Survivor League, so I should go first here in the fantasy draft.
Oh, all right.
All right. So I have the number one pick, and I think that I would be remiss if I didn't go here. I think there's the consensus number one, and I'm going to take him. I'm going to go with Derek, number one overall. Okay. Was that the consensus number one pick on the board?
I think so. I think certainly he's played the best game thus far, and is the most equipped to handle things that come thrown his way. So,
I don't know if he will win the game, but
exactly.
Like, I feel like that if you were charting the probabilities right now, he's in the best position. I mean, I personally don't think that he has a great chance to win, because I feel like there's not a lot of like wire to wire winners. If we were going to look at the who's going to win the game right now at this point in Big Brother 15, I think we might be saying like, oh, Helen really is, got everything going her way. And I think, oh, she looks like that, you know, she has everything under control, and things sort of melted down for her. And I wonder if you could have the same sort of thing for Derek.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely agree with you there.
Okay.
So Derek is yours.
Being the leader in the clubhouse in week four does not a Big Brother winner make.
Agreed.
Okay.
Agreed.
All right. The number two pick, and then you will have the number three pick in the snake draft.
Correct. So I am going to go with Christine.
Okay. Oh, that's, you stole my, that's, that was my,
I know,
winner pick.
I listened to the podcast.
Oh, man.
I knew she wasn't going to last to the next wraparound, but I definitely like her.
That was good stealth mode cowboy. Listening to my scouting reports in advance.
Exactly.
Okay, so Christine is off the board. The double X factor. Talk about Christine at number two.
Yeah, I think Christine is in a good position with a lot of options, and I think she's smart enough to know how to use those options. My only concern would be that she doesn't appear to be much of a competition threat, if there's anything other than memory. So that's a bit of a concern, but I think she's going to make a move at some point to position herself in a good spot. She might even be the one to get Derek out. So,
okay.
When the time is right. And for my second pick, simply because I just want to be able to watch him and root for him, I'm going to go with Zach.
Zach, okay.
Yeah. I don't necessarily think he's the third most likely to win, but in this game, because there have been so many unanimous votes, I think that there might be such a long stretch before anyone's willing to make a big move in the game. And he's the one most likely to make a big move in the game. And I think sometimes the big moves backfire, but sometimes the big moves pay huge dividends. So I'm going to gamble on this being a season where that first big move is like a knockout punch that gives him a lot of momentum.
Hey, I get it. That this is, you want to have a face of your franchise. You know, you have Christine on your team. You need somebody who's going to sell tickets for your team. You want to give the fans of AJ, you know, somebody to really root for. And I understand why you would go with Zach here.
Yeah. Slap, slap, slap.
The Zach attack. Okay. Boy, lots of good players that are here on the board at the 4-5 turn. I am going to, I'm just going to double down here and go, I got Dad, give me Mom. Give me Frankie here at number four. Again, I don't know if he could run the table, but I feel good with Frankie here being part of my team because I think he's going to go far no matter what. Can he go all the way to the end? I don't know, but the guy has played pretty well. I think he could probably tone it down a little bit, maybe play too hard, and I think at some point he might get caught up, but I have no issue with him as somebody who I'm thinking of going to Final Five, Final Six. And then I guess, you know, I've got the Derek, I've got the Frankie, I'm going to complete the Team America trifecta. Give me Donnie here at five. So give me all of Team America, Derek, Frankie, Donnie, and God bless America.
Well, that's a surprise.
Yes, Donnie at five. How about that? I hope you sleep comfortably. Donnie.
Well, okay, so I'm on the 6-7 turn here, and I think we've gotten a lot of the major players off the board here. You know what? I am going to go with the second coming of Jeff and Jordan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to take them both simply because
a package deal.
I'm going to take the package deal since I'm on the turn here. I'm going to go with both Nicole and Hayden. Don't call me Hayden Moss Voss.
So technically Hayden is the number six pick overall?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Sure.
For posterity.
He's lasted so long under the radar where no one's putting him up. I just think there's a little bit of mojo there that makes me, a little bit happy about having him on my team at this stage of the draft. And just because Nicole is a part of this Christine alliance, you know, let me get you. You've got your Team America. I've got the what are they calling themselves? That the little trio, the troika there of Christine and Nicole and Hayden.
They're just the weirdest alliance or the strangest.
The weirdest alliance, the outcasts.
Yeah.
Whatever they're going to call themselves. Let me go. Comic Con is this week. I'm going with Team Comic Con there.
Okay. The 8-9 turn is what I've got here, and I think this guy fell pretty far in the draft, and I think I gotta take him. I think it's a steal at number eight. Give me Cody here at number eight. I know he's coming off the HOH, and maybe, you know, he was crying a lot. Maybe his maybe he's a little bit of an undervalued asset at this point, but I think this is a steal at number eight overall, the last pick in the fourth round. Give me Cody, and then I'll double down on the marriage of convenience. Give me the replacement level player, the beautiful and alluring Amba.
Excellent. Okay. I think that's good to have both of them, I think.
This is where the rubber meets the road here now. Definitely this is a, on the draft board, I feel like this is the end of a tier.
Yeah, although, I gotta say, I'm actually kind of happy that Caleb has fallen this far. And I'm still able to take him. I didn't have to split up the budding romance and of Nicole and Hayden, and I still get Caleb, who at least we know has a chance to win competitions. I'm assuming the plan is to backdoor him this week, so yes, there's a chance that he gets 0 points from this point out. But of the three that are left, I mean, who's the most likely to win competitions? I think that's definitely Caleb.
All right, beast mode drafting.
Beast mode drafting.
Which beast mode did you prefer? Caleb's beast mode cowboy or Frank from Opposite Worlds beast mode?
Caleb's in the comfort of a warm house. He doesn't have to go outside in the frozen tundras. So it's a little less impressive, yeah.
What do you mean, bro? What are you talking about, bro? All right, so here's where it's a real Rafe's choice for you here. We have two players left, Victoria or Jocasta. Who do you think is longer for the Big Brother world?
Yeah, at this point, it's not so much who I want as who I don't want, I think. All right, well, you know, we're getting points for winning competitions.
Yeah.
And I think Jocasta, and she's on the team with God, but she's also on the team with that sour stomach of hers. She might not even participate in competitions she's eligible to play in. I think Victoria has a chance.
Yeah.
Of being one of these players. If she shows just a little bit more personality, she's Gina Marie. You know, she's one of these players who you write off, but could turn around the season and make it a long way. So I am actually going to go. So help me. I'm going with Victoria here and settling you with, you can take Jocasta, you can take God, you can take Buddha, you can take the Zoroastrian entity Mithra. I don't care. Take the entire pantheon with you. I'm going with Victoria.
Okay. You know what? Good. I'm happy with it. I think if I would have had a choice between Jocasta and Victoria, I think I would have taken Jocasta just because I don't see Jocasta going anywhere. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if you woke up and it's, you know, the first week in September, it's Labor Day, and Jocasta is somehow in there in the final six mix, being the reincarnation of Gen City, where it's just she's been there the whole summer and nobody ever votes her out because there's never a week where she's on the block against somebody where you're saying, well, we got to take out Jocasta this week.
I agree. One of these two is going to be that perennial pawn.
Yeah,
absolutely. There becomes a sympathy point, though, I think, where people are like, you know, Jocasta's sick all the time. Let's just send her out. And let's do the mercy killing.
Victoria could potentially, you know, get on people's nerves more in the house. You know, no, people don't want to sleep in the bed with her. And, you know, that she can be a little more prickly than Jocasta. And Jocasta, I kind of feel like if she's cleaning up, maybe you don't even know she's there. And so if she could ever get through the stomach issue, maybe Jocasta has a little more longevity. I mean, this is just a total longevity play. I kind of feel like I could see her sticking around a couple weeks longer than Victoria. With Agreed. Winning no competitions along the way.
Agreed. I mean, the wrong HOH gets in there and puts Jocasta up against the wrong person, then she's gone, you know. But certainly, yeah, she could definitely be along for a jolly ride the entire length of the trip, too. I mean, anything's possible. We're arguing over 11 and 12 here.
Yeah. No, there's no...
I think we both agree neither one has a chance in HE double hockey six to win the game.
Yeah. There's no bad picks at 11 and 12 in the Big Brother draft.
Exactly.
Okay. This is fantastic. Outstanding work once again, AJ. This might have been your best spot here of going through the archetypes and drafting.
Are you just trying to flatter me to set me up for a fall later
no,
on?
No. Very good stuff. AJ, I'm also very excited. And I don't know if too many other people know about this, but you've also been doing some work on post-show recaps with the esteemed Josh Wiggler talking about the 10-year anniversary of Lost.
Yeah, me and the Wiggler getting together. It's been a lot of fun. We were visiting the island after all these years. And
I didn't know that about you.
Yeah. We've taken this week off because of Comic-Con, but we'll be back next week with another podcast. We're working our way through the numbers, 4, 8, 15, 16, 23, 42. We are up to 15. I don't know what the topic will be just yet, but I'm sure it'll be fun. And we're having a good time with that, yeah.
Okay, so you could check that out weekly on post-show recaps. We're working on getting that its own podcast feed as well on postshowrecaps.com. And also, AJ, so the word on the street is that you are going to be one of the players participating in the upcoming Rob Has a Fantasy Football League for the 20-team challenge.
I'm looking forward to that as well. I see my goal last season of crushing Peter Brown from Big Brother Canada worked.
He's out of the league, right?
He's out of the league. I defeated him. My entire goal last year was to defeat Peter Brown, and I like the Shield. I just wanted that was my goal, and I thrashed him enough that he's not coming back. So I think that's probably bad news for the Shield.
Yes. No Peter Brown this year. The live Rob Has a Fantasy Football League for Fantasy Draft will be held, I believe, Tuesday night, August 26th. So mark that on your calendar if you're interested in watching that sort of nonsense play out live. I think 9:30 Eastern is when that's set to go. So that'll be a lot of fun as well.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
And for all of your fantasy football information to get you along the way, follow at AJ Mass on Twitter and the fine work he's doing on ESPN.com. AJ, are you more focused still on baseball or football at this point?
I am. I'm kind of almost in the process of converting to baseball full time. I mean, obviously, I'm still going to be watching the games and playing fantasy football, and I'll know the broad strokes. But I no longer will I know like the four string tight end on teams. I'm just focused really primarily on Major League right now, especially with the trade deadline coming up. I haven't even had time to really look into football at all. But nevertheless, you know, I can certainly give advice if people want to ask for it on Twitter. I will do my best. I just don't make any promises that I'll be quite as up to speed as I used to be. But for baseball, you want to talk, you know, backup catchers on you know, West Coast teams, you know, heavy at it.
Sure. And if I may be self-indulgent for a moment, AJ was a former Mr. Met during the late 90s. He was the first Mr. Met after they brought him back, and he wrote about it in his book, Yes, It's Hot in Here, which you can check out on Amazon at robhasawebsite.com/mascot. Lots of people really have enjoyed that read. Do you feel like our beloved Mets have turned a corner yet, AJ?
No, I just think what it is that there's so many teams that are closely packed together in record. There aren't as many, like, you know, runaway teams or like super talented teams. So the fact that the Mets are still like within like 7 or 8 games of the last wild card, I think, is creating this false illusion of success where none really exists. I would like to see them get rid of Bartolo and just get some prospects for him. And just, you know, look towards next season. I think next season they can compete because, like I said, there aren't any runaway favorites. I think they're really one big hitter away, you know, one power bat. And then, you know, if Matt Harvey comes back from the surgery, okay, that rotation is actually a lot better than people think. And so I don't think they're making the playoffs this year. I don't think they're making a run. I think they should be sellers here at the trade deadline. But I am very optimistic for next season for this team. If they could just make like maybe one key signing in the offseason, you know, this could very well be an 85 win team, 86, 87. And that's good enough to make the playoffs.
Do you think that one big power bat could potentially be Devin Shepard? Bro,
I don't know that he'd be willing to do that.
Put me in,
because,
coach.
You know, I hear he's got family commitments. I don't know if you heard that.
Look, if I could take my daughter on the road with me, then we could make one hell of a squad. You know, I could be the GM. I could be bringing people onto the team as well. Player coach, player manager.
I think I'd probably rather have the specialist Philip Shepard.
Yeah, I can't believe that we never talked about any potential relation between the Philip Shepard and Devin Shepard along the way.
Yeah, I'm going to call you. I'm going to call you the father figure.
Okay, awesome. So fantastic job, AJ. Again, if you want to check out AJ's book, it's a fun read, especially if you're around the pool this summer. If any baseball fan or sports fan will certainly appreciate it. Go to robhasawebsite.com/mascot to get the link for to purchase it on Amazon, or How Fantasy Sports Explains the World, where you could read more about the 12 archetypes at robhasawebsite.com/AJMass. Boom. There
awesome.
You go. AJ, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks a lot, Rob. I appreciate it. As always, a good time, and if not before the 12 people left in the next Survivor season, certainly I'll be around checking me out on post-show recaps, like you said, and let's see how our draft goes.
Okay, AJ, thanks again. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, everybody, there you have it. That was the great AJ Mass back here on Rob Has a Podcast. Always fun to talk about the final 12 on Survivor and Big Brother with AJ Mass every season. And I feel good about my team. I feel good about my team. But we will see how good I feel about my team after we talk to Brian Lynch. We're going to do a little bit of a live feed update because there was some craziness that was going on overnight with the HOH of Zach in particular. So Brian will update us on all of the Zach craziness. A Zach attack had indeed broken out in the house. But first, I want to thank our sponsors for this episode of Rob Has a Podcast, and those are our friends over at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-day fantasy baseball site. And just like AJ and I, you know, we're drafting for a whole season. You know, if stuff goes down and my team sucks, I can't draft a new team tomorrow like I could over at DraftKings.com. If my baseball players that I drafted, if I don't like them, I can just go back and get new ones and have a new chance to win some money. Some people have won as much as $4,000 with starting with just 11. Somebody else won $100,000 on their first time ever playing, and somebody even won $1 million at DraftKings. Seriously, bro, $1 million in one day playing fantasy, because DraftKings takes watching baseball to a whole new level. You can win instant cash every day with every game. So there's no season-long commitments, no being stuck with players, just winning money with each day that comes along. So right now, score free entry into DraftKings' biggest fantasy baseball contest of the year. Over $3 million in cash prizes with $1 million for first place. Enter ROB today at DraftKings.com for your free shot at hundreds, thousands, or even $1 million. Free spots are going quick, so enter ROB now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. All right, so I figure, why not go ahead and get this guy on the line while we've got the podcast machine already warmed up. So here he is, the man who's been keeping an eye on everything that's been going on overnight and into Friday on the Big Brother live feeds. Please welcome in Brian Lynch.
Oh my God, Rob, I want to change my prediction for this week. After one night, change it.
All right, of course, before Brian gets into anything, this is, we are talking spoilers for what's going to be going on the Sunday night show on Big Brother, so... Okay, so it's spoiler time. Of course, we will cover this all on the podcast Sunday night at 9:15 with Hayden Moss. All right, so Brian, crazy night with a real Zach attack happened.
Yes, and it's pretty much, I think we were all expecting it, but I didn't realize it was going to be this awesome, actually.
See, I thought that Zach was going to come up with a lot of stuff, and that Frankie was going to be sort of like, no, now Zach, come on, that's not a good idea. Let's not do that. That's a bad move. That's a bad move. Like, okay, you're right. You're right. You're right. Okay. And I think that it was going to be a lot of Frankie talking Zach off the ledge, but what's been going on?
Well, this Team America task has wrapped Zach up into putting someone on blast in these ceremonies. So Team America, Frankie and Derek's been actively trying to talk Zach out of doing crazy stuff this whole time. Well, they're not doing that this week because they need him to make them money.
They're financially incentivized for Zach to be crazy.
Exactly. And it's starting to make me think, well, if Zach's the one that's making them the money, then how likely is it that they're going to keep taking him along?
Well, I guess that's a good thing, but you know, at the end of the day, it's really not fair that, you know, Zach is the one that's risking his game and doing all the crazy stuff, and he's not even getting any of the money.
Yeah, but Zach seems happy because he feels like he's a legend and an all-star now.
Yeah, he's getting the airtime. Okay, so tell me about the nominations. What do Zach and Frankie ultimately end up doing here?
Well, there was a whole lot of discussion. Zach pretty much told everyone that they were going on the block. He said that, I mean, he was joking about it. Said if your name begins with a letter that's in the alphabet, you're probably going up on the block. And everybody is just scrambling. It was so hilarious when he would walk out of the room. Just the looks on people's faces was just amazing.
Are the other house guests amused by this stuff, or are they getting pissed?
They are horrified, except for like Frankie, right? So Frankie is like going around. He's like, oh well, you know, he's going to do what he's going to do. I'm going to try to keep him from doing it. I just hope that I'm the one that's HOH, you know, to save y'all from any of this mayhem.
Okay.
But eventually Zach settles on nominating Christine and Nicole.
Now, I was reading a lot of the updates from overnight. It seems like Zach has had a little bit of a falling out with Christine. I guess he wanted her to go up on the block, and then she wouldn't volunteer, and then he was going off about how she was a floater.
Yes, he wanted her to go up on the block and throw it so he could remain head of household. And she's not only refused that, she went on an epic rampage. And, you know, she's telling people that she's done with Zach. Basically, the detonators is over. She's got a real close relationship with Cody. She kind of threw Zach under the bus to Cody, said some stuff I thought that really wasn't true. But Zach went and talked to Cody went and talked to Zach about it, and Zach got offended. He was like, well, who told you this? And Cody wouldn't tell him. And then Cody retracted the statement altogether. He's like, well, nobody told me anything.
Hmm. So, all right. So maybe Cody could be the odd man out here. I've been talking about, like, if the detonators ever split up, maybe it's Cody and Christine that go off and form the sloppy seconds to take out the detonators.
I just don't think it would split evenly, because even at that point, you would have Cody's connection to Derek, which is still strong. And even now, Cody's not really sharing everything with Christine. So, but Christine's not really sharing everything with Nicole either. So it's, everybody's kind of like, especially those players are keeping certain information to themselves.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. So ultimately, what does Zach end up doing?
He nominates Christine specifically because she does not contribute anything to the Alliance. All she does is sit there, laugh, and accept her safety from everybody else in the Alliance.
Okay.
So he says she's going to have to, you know, do some work for the Alliance. And he nominates Nicole.
How did that go over?
Well, I mean, of course it didn't go over well, because Zach has to put everybody on blast in his nomination speech.
Okay, well, let's go. And then give me Frankie's nominations, and then let's talk about the nomination speech.
Okay, so Frankie's nominations are Jocasta and Victoria.
Okay.
Just the standard nominations. And it, like we said in the last podcast, Jocasta's stomach is a bit sour, and people are still telling me that she's still not feeling well, so Big Brother's been telling them to hydrate for the Battle of the Blocks. We might have another Jocasta Battle of the Block issue.
Oh, my God. You know what? Then just medevac her out of the show if she can't compete in any of the competitions. Like, this is like a new strategy where it's like, I'm in the competition. I can't play. Can't play. And, you know, so it's sort of like, you know, everybody feel bad for me. And maybe, you know, I won't get voted out and I won't have to actually play in the competitions.
Yeah, it would be nice if, like, people that got in the house actually could digest food and pass it out of their body.
She doing? I mean, that is this still with, like, the laxatives and all the stuff? Is she doing something that's abnormal?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, the thing about the laxatives and the fiber and the heat exhaustion, I mean, just to look at her, you knew she was really, really hurting. Now, to look at her now, I mean, she looks like she just got sad face on. It's a totally different thing. So I don't know. I ain't going to say that she's playing it up or lying about it, because, you know, she doesn't lie or anything like that.
Has she been a have-not yet?
I don't believe so. No.
Not recently. No time in the last 2 weeks, at least.
No. Right. No one was last week.
So I don't understand what the issue is here.
I think she said she was blaming it on someone's food.
Okay, come on. Like, if you have this many dietary issues, then you can't be in the Big Brother house. You got to put that on your application.
Or start blaming your stomach instead of someone else's food.
I've never even heard of it. Oh, I have a sour stomach. I can't do anything for the next 2 weeks.
Well, she said that when she burped, it was sour. And I was, ugh. And she'd go, bruh! Oh, my stomach.
All right, yeah. Good time to get Jocasta out of here. I know I just took her in the fantasy draft on my team. This was with the final pick, but what am I going to do? All right, so tell me about the speech that Zach ends up giving.
Oh, well, before he even gives the speech, he's in the diary room. Last night, he's in the diary room. People are sitting in the living room, and he's evil laughing in the diary room so loud that people in the living room are just sitting there gawking. Nicole's like, you can hear him laughing in there. It's going to be awful.
Brian, is he a target now?
Zach?
Yeah.
Of course he's a target. He was a target before this, though. I mean, he's drawn these lines.
Yeah.
It's like this thing. It's, you know, the Dr. Will thing to make the target so big that it disappears. It's almost like he's attempting that.
Okay.
But if it works, I mean, it's got to be considered genius, because at this point, I don't see how it's going to work.
All right. Well, it's going to be a fun ride.
It's going to be shocking.
This is the Dr. Strangelove thing where he's just going to, you know, ride the bomb all the way down.
It's like, you remember when Peter during Big Brother Canada was talking about chaos theory and it never really panned out?
Mm-hmm.
This is chaos theory.
Okay.
Without a doubt.
Look, at least it'll be fun.
Oh, it's going to be amazing. I just hope he makes a jury because, you know, he's my pick.
All right, so tell me about his speech.
Oh, well, his nomination speech. Okay, well, you know, I nominate you, Christine, and you, Nicole. Christine, if we pulled out the Big Brother dictionary and looked up the word floater, there would be a picture of you and Gin City holding hands and never being called to the diary room. Basically, you're irrelevant. And Nicole. Oh, Nicole, you're a super looking cute in that little germitard, like a true super fan. Well, you Fruit Loop dingus, I bet you didn't see this coming. That's what the plan was.
Okay, so we don't know if they did it. At this hour, did they do the nominations already?
Yes, nominations.
They're done.
We're awaiting the Battle of the Block.
Okay, we're awaiting the B.O.B. It's bad news for Jocasta here in the Los Angeles area. And I probably live about, you know, 5 or 6 miles away from the Big Brother house. It's a hot one today, Brian. Temperatures are almost 100 degrees out here.
Hey, and I mean, we see it like not every year, but often in the Big Brother house in the summer, people get heat exhaustion passing out. From Zingbot to Chicken George to Jocasta.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I hope it's not a food challenge where she has to eat something gross.
Oh, what? Imagine if it was drinking milk.
In the blender. Okay.
Sour milk.
All right. So who are the targets right now for Zach and Frankie? I know we all said last night we thought Caleb was the target. Is that still the case?
No. I mean, from what I know, Zach was going around saying that Nicole had come up to him and told him that Amber was targeted. And he believes this. But his response to hearing that Amber was targeting him was to go get Caleb to go talk to her.
Boy,
that's
ruthless.
She got so pissed off that she's refusing to talk to any of the bomb squad members, and she's threatening to expose them if she goes on the block.
Yeah. Why would... So, hold on. So Amber, according to Nicole, Amber is targeting Zach, correct?
Yes.
Okay. But is Amber the target of Zach?
Yes. He's pretty much changed his mind, from what I understand, to go after Amber.
Why? Because it's sort of like that she's like a patsy in the bomb squad and they got to take her out before she squeals that she knows too many secrets of where the bodies are buried on the bomb squad?
They're not worried about her squealing on the bomb squad because, you know, the bomb squad's out.
Yeah.
She thinks, and Caleb thinks, that the bomb squad's still together. The only person that doesn't know about the bomb squad, as I understand it, is Victoria, who would come down on the side of Zach anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't think that would be an issue.
Is it true that Victoria doesn't know that there's a TV show being filmed called Big Brother 16?
I mean, I don't know if she does. I mean, she's... I'm torn about this girl, Rob. On one level, everybody's saying how dumb she is, and she says some crazy stuff. I mean, like, she believes in unicorns and stuff like this. But on the other hand, she was a fan of Big Brother Israel, and she claims to have sat down and watched every single episode of Big Brother during the time she found out she was going on or could have come on the show and the time she went on the show.
Big Brother US?
Yes.
Or Big Brother Israel?
Big Brother US.
Okay. She also said she got carried away by a bird at one point.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to believe that she actually believes some of this stuff. That a unicorn is real? You got to be kidding me.
Did you see during Big Brother last night that there's like a Verizon commercial where a guy gets carried away by a bird that they had this? Have you seen that commercial where the guy is like, they're like, less is more, but more isn't always better. And the guy is like, hey, look, there's a bird on my shoulder. And then like a bunch of birds go on his shoulder and then a big bird comes and flies the guy away. I said, oh, this is what great integrated advertising.
They've been doing some real decent advertising tricks this season. From the stalker advertisement.
Oh, yeah.
Birds flying away with people.
Yeah, they really have the finger on the pulse. All right, so does Frankie have a target?
I feel like Frankie, he would be Amber. Amber would rather, Frankie would rather get rid of Amber, for sure.
What happened that made Caleb safe and Amber in the crosshairs?
I really think it was about people telling Zach that Amber was coming after him. And it's really true, a lot truer than Caleb coming after him. Because when Caleb says, yeah, we need to go after Zach, it's because Amber's telling him that.
Okay.
So it's better for Zach to be going after Amber, really.
And then well, how does Cody feel about all this?
Cody, oh my God. See, Cody's he's not in Team America, but to see him sitting up there with Team America talking to Zach about how his nomination speeches are going to go down was just hilarious. Cody was freaking out.
Cody didn't want him to do it?
No, he said, well, see, because they asked him to do damage control with Christine. And he said, well, bro, after this Dom speech goes down, there will be no damage control. And that's out of the picture.
And now, I also saw in your notes that you said that Zach really went to bat for Donnie. And I saw a lot on Twitter last night that Zach was saying he wouldn't put Donnie on the block. What's going on between Zach and Donnie?
Donnie had went to Zach. And I can't remember exactly what the pitch was a couple weeks ago. But really got the ball rolling on them trying to work together. And then, you know, just in their short talks last night, Zach just said, well, you know, you've already, you know, done what you need to do in this game. You're the reason that Devin's gone. You know, we're going to pay it forward and you're not going to be on the block this week. And then when Frankie said something about nominating Donnie, Zach shut it down. He said he don't deserve to go on the block. He's the reason that Devin's gone. I don't know why we'd be doing this to him. Somebody else has got to contribute to our alliance, and it's got to be Christine.
Okay. Interesting to see how the weekend is going to shake out. You got to think Christine and Nicole are going to win the battle of the block against Jocasta and Victoria, right?
I would think so. I mean, are we expecting Jocasta just to fold here?
Well, what if Jocasta can't play Battle of the Block? I mean, is it like Game of Thrones? Can Jocasta elect a champion to fight for her in the Battle of the Block?
I don't know. Whose head does she want to get smashed?
I don't know. So we'll see what ends up happening. But what if Jocasta can't play? Will Victoria have to take them on like 2-on-1?
Maybe it'll be just like that other week where they just like attached her to the rope and Caleb just like yanked her up and down the whole time and she's just like dangled.
Okay. And so if that holds and Christine and Nicole win, then Frankie will be the only HOH. Jocasta and Victoria will be on the block, and then it's going to just come down to the veto. If Jocasta or Victoria win the veto, I guess. I mean, is there anybody that would leave the nominations the same? Is there any way one of those two would go home?
Yes, I believe Caleb wouldn't use the veto because he would fear that Amber would go on the block. Although Caleb basically did give Zach permission at one point to nominate her because of all the things Amber was saying.
And how would Caleb feel if he found out that Amber was the target?
He's already been prepped for that. So he feels like his request is, let's do this later. Let's take her out later. I know she's talking about coming after you or whatever, but she says she's not. She just said that when y'all were fighting. I think that that's legit. But basically, if Zach decided to do it, that he wouldn't be mad.
Okay. We'll see. All right. All right, Brian, thank you so much for coming on today, giving us some extra bonus coverage on BB16.
Always a pleasure, Rob.
All right, Brian, so I will talk to you on Sunday night with Hayden Moss at 9:15 p.m. Eastern time. Okay, talk to you then. Okay, buddy?
All right, have a good one, Rob.
Bye. All right, everybody, that was Brian Lynch back here on Rob Has a Podcast. So that's going to do it for our weekend edition of the Big Brother Update. Thanks to AJ Mass and Brian Lynch for being my guests here on this show. Very, very fun when we get to do special coverage of any of these shows. Hope you guys enjoy it too. Of course, we'll be back on Sunday night with Hayden Moss at 9:15 p.m. Eastern after the Sunday night episode of Big Brother. Hope you're locked in here for our Big Brother coverage. You can subscribe to all of our podcasts when you go to Rob Has a Website. .com/iTunes for the iTunes feed, or for all of our Big Brother only podcasts, you can go to robhasawebsite.com/BB podcast or click the podcast tab on robhasawebsite.com to see other ways to subscribe. So hope you guys are having a great weekend. Hope there's some nice weather wherever you are, and we'll talk to you again on Sunday night. Take care. Bye.